notebooks and newsbeats, hear that piano rail. Take down the facts, Ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace. Trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street.
Am I on? Yeah, you can hear me. This is Tom Nato. Dan isn't here, so you can tune out right now. The first thing I want to say is how pleased and excited and finally not impatient KRBS is now web streaming. That means that my dad, even my dad, can hear me back in Maine if his wife would let him have a computer. She's terrified of those things. But anyway, my sister back there can hear us. And pal in Maryland and some people I know in Southern California. That's three. I didn't even know I had that many friends. Anyway, today Dan isn't here, but we do have a special guest, Charles Chuck Smith. He's a... Didn't I say who I was? Oh, well, my name is Tom Nato. The guest is Charles Chuck Smith. He's a labor representative, and we'll be talking a little bit about labor today. But first of all, we're going to mark some anniversaries. In Cuba, where nights are gay and where star-eyed Stellas light their fellas' panatellas, this weekend saw Fidel Castro celebrate his 79th birthday. God, I can remember when he was just a kid. He is the longest-serving world leader, having pulled off a communist revolution in 1959, 46 years ago.
They said it would never last.
You know, and that guy's got to be smart. Well, smarter than us. And held power ever since. Castro appears to have made a steady recovery from a fall last October that left him with a fractured right arm and broken left knee, the BBC reports. He has already given 38 televised speeches this year, compared to about 15 for the whole of 2004. His addresses can stretch to, ready, 6 or 7 hours. And I wonder if you're made to listen to that, because I wouldn't. In recent years, other lefty governments have taken office in South America, Brazil, Ecuador, Uruguay, with a strong lefty movement. There's been a de facto power movement in Argentina, and they've achieved that by just ignoring a regular rightist government. Can some California cities and counties be far behind? Which brings us to anniversaries of unions, which we're going to be talking about. It was 25 years ago, on August 14th, 1980, that Poland's trade union revolution, Solidarity, began. It started with a workers' strike at Lenin Shipyard. Welders and riggers demanded pay equal to the state rate the government gave to cops. Certainly, I'd like to get that. The revolt spilled over to the town of Gdansk and ultimately toppled Soviet rule. The 1980 strike was noticed over the weekend by the BBC. Strike leader Lech Walesa became president of Poland and was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1983 for leading a relatively peaceful revolution. And now we're going to turn to some state news as we're prepping for our labor special issue today. Actress paid not to talk of Schwarzenegger's affair. Well, that's because it wasn't much. I've always thought that that guy is really gay.
You mean it was a little affair?
A little, a very little. Sort of like about that long.
Well, I think she only got $20,000 to be paid off, so it must have been a very, very, very small affair.
Hey, $20,000 equals cheap slut. Anyway, no, that's just joking, right? Well, pop in anytime you want. Did you have a comment to make?
No, I just want a piece of that action.
Oh, I get the joke now. Anyway, in a story by Amy Argetzinger, who knows, from the Washington Post on August 13th. It says that, this is out of Los Angeles, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, already facing plummeting approval ratings and questions about his business dealings, took another hit Friday with a report that a tabloid publisher with close ties to the former movie star paid an alleged paramour of his $20,000 not to discuss their relationship. The August 2003 confidentiality agreement between American Media Inc., publisher of the National Enquirer, Globe and Star, my favorite publications, and bit part actress, get this name, Gigi Goyette, was reached 2 days after Schwarzenegger announced his candidacy for governor.
Was she the one Arnold wanted to stick her head in the toilet?
Could be. And you know what it is he announced his candidacy. Oh my God, I forgot about that one. Give her $20,000 and get her off my back. And 7 months before he signed on as an editor for two bodybuilding magazines owned by the company. Okay, the same company that does the National Enquirer, Globe and Star. Details of that agreement, in which Goyette agreed not to share her story with anyone outside American media, were reported in a front-page story in the L.A. Times on Friday.
Now, wait a minute. Are they going to be writing a publishing something about this later after the governor's gone and just say, hey, we just bought her and, you know, and held her because we needed to investigate the whole story?
That's sort of like the 2001 9/11 investigation committee. Pretty soon we're going to have a report on that.
More details. This is a really, really, really small affair, though. I mean, that's pretty clear. You know, this story mentions his approval ratings. You know, right now in California, it's like one in three voters support Arnold.
You know, actually,
even in Yuba City,
you have to understand that Yuba City is in Sutter County, the most right-wing county by Republican registration, and the other offbeat far-right party registrations and voters in the state of California itself, except for San Francisco and a little bit of Oakland and maybe like Mendocino, is a right-wing state anyway. And well, Hollywood, that's lefty.
Last year when Arnold was in Yuba City, it cost $5,000 to see him. This year, when he came to visit Yuba City for his birthday at the Paradiso's restaurant, it was $250, and organizers were crying because people didn't want to go see him. So it's kind of funny to see all these people who did go, you know, get funneled through the back door. Arnold comes through the side door to avoid all the protesters. There were no protesters the first time Arnold visited Yuba City. But first time he visits Yuba City, it's $5,000 to see him. The second time, it's $250. Arnold Schwarzenegger's been discounted 95% in Sutter County, one of the most right-wing counties in all of California. I mean, this thing about his losing popularity, it's real.
Clearinghouse fire sale on that, Governor.
And he got wine thrown on him.
You got what?
At his birthday party, he got wine thrown on him by a Republican.
Well, actually, spilled on him.
Well, that depends on your interpretation. Yeah.
I like to think of it as slashed by an onslaught of white wine.
Well, I thought it was
red, so it's ruined his suit.
Actually, we've confirmed everything but the color.
Oh, okay.
He did have to change clothes, though. I guess he carries clothes around.
Well, you know that guy. Just call him up and say, what did you spill and when did you spill it?
Well, I think he carries, you know, a change of clothes around in case he has an encounter with one of these women he has to pay $20,000 to later. I mean, through his company or his association with the gym building company.
Anyway, to sum that one up, the governor's office would not comment. Anyway, so our guest today is Chuck Smith, and he is a what?
Oh, it depends on who you're talking to.
Well, what is your job description? What is your title?
I'm a business representative with Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. I represent employees in the public sector, cities, counties, water agencies, and
wait a minute,
in Northern California.
Isn't that the public sector that we're always bashing at this station?
Well, you know, probably. And that's because you don't understand how significant public employees are to the local economy.
Well, doesn't that prove how liberal we are, that we represent all points of view?
We appreciate that. The public employees do important things. They treat your sewage, my God.
Well, I just want to point out to people that I'm the funny sidekick in this show. Dan is the serious person, and that's why Chuck is getting razzed this whole time. I'm actually intelligent, I'm told. I've seen no direct evidence myself of that fact, but I'm told I am at least above average. Anyway, to get the labor section of this show kicked off, I want to report on somebody else's report. Jason Salzman has written an article on the Sweeney Stern soap opera for tompaine.org. It's a pretty good site if you go to it. There's always got a lot of good stories on there. Anyway, he's addressing the issue of the importance of unions to a community, which he says usually slides under the news media's radar screen. It's not news when a construction worker brings her sick daughter to the doctor using the health insurance she gets through her union contract. Neither is it news when a non-unionized Walmart worker takes her kid to the city hospital and taxpayers pick up the tab. And it's normally not news when a union helps an injured worker obtain adequate workers' compensation. But unions do make news, and lots of it, in the context of dramatic events like a strike, bankruptcy, or scandal. And they make big news when they have internal fights or schisms. And so it was with the coverage of the recent decision by the Service and Employees International Union, SEIU, as we will speak about it later, and others to part ways with the AFL-CIO, splitting America's unionized workers. The AFL-CIO split gave journalists the chance to meet their professional obligation to inform readers about broader union-related issues, which are chronically underreported due to the event-centered nature of news. So we have a guy in here who's going to tell us about some of the issues facing them and some specific details. Chuck, take it away.
Put the whole thing on my plate. Well, if we want to talk about the schism, I can tell you from perspective of the Central Labor Council that I'm involved in up in Marysville, it's unfortunate that that the schism is happening. When labor's fighting each other, when the various unions are fighting each other, there's little time left to go fight the capitalists that are you know, taking advantage of the resource of labor.
Wait, well, let me interrupt here. You say labor people fight each other. Now, when I think of labor guys fighting, I think of a lot of grunts. But you sound pretty intelligent. What's it like to be in the midst of a labor dispute between other labor groups or between an internal fight?
Well, in an internal fight, if you work with one union and let's back up. What the AFL-CIO does, one of the things that it does is it provides protection for one union in its jurisdiction from raids from other unions if they're affiliated. Oh. When these unions, like SEIU and now the Teamsters and some others, leave AFL-CIO, there's no longer any sanctions that can be imposed on them for raiding employees who are already unionized. And I know that one of the concerns that our union has, one of the concerns that a lot of unions have, is whether SEIU and the Teamsters are going to go after other employees existing union members. Now, SEIU, I've talked to some of their folks, they insist that's not going to happen, that's not the point. They're leaving the AFL-CIO as they believe that AFL-CIO did not put enough money into organizing, that they were putting too much money into politics. Well, had labor been more successful on the national scene politically, SEIU wouldn't have this opportunity to argue that labor shouldn't be putting its money into politics. But politics is the most important thing that labor can do. I mean, that's without labor's voice in the political process, you're going to have things like the National Labor Relations Board stacked by anti-union folks appointed by people like George Bush, who hates unions. In California right now, for instance, Arnold Schwarzenegger is going after unions left and right. Proposition 75 on the ballot in November is an attempt to silence labor's voice. It's going to make it difficult for unions to spend their money on politics. Without labor's involvement in the political process. The only money, the only impetus is going to be Wall Street.
Okay.
And when labor fights, it's like when labor is fighting each other, it takes away energy for the fight against Wall Street.
Well, not only that, but the people on Wall Street are the ones that own the companies that don't like the unions, so they're always willing to present bad news about them, I imagine.
Yeah, you mean like the newspapers and television?
Increasingly so.
Well, I remember in the late 1950s, for instance, there was a strike at the Appeal Democrat newspaper in Marysville. Those workers never came back. Freedom Newspapers hired a strike-breaking team. And those folks became, there was a team of printers, for instance, that went around the country whenever there was a newspaper strike. They'd call these printers, would be in town within 24 hours, put the paper out. Well, they all became permanent employees at the Appeal Democrat. In fact, I didn't realize for years, I was growing up next to a guy who worked for the Appeal Democrat as a printer. Well, he turned out to be on that strike breaking team, and kind of made my, you know, give me the chills a little bit.
Did you beat him up?
No, but I decided I didn't like him.
Oh, okay. Just a reminder, you're listening to KRBS FM 107.1 on your radio dial, and on your radio dial, but now also on your website dial. There's no dial. That's a what is it? It's a bar that goes back and forth when you scan. But anyway,
you asked if I beat this guy up. You know, unions don't. We don't beat people, you know, over the head with batons and whatnot. That's what the police did to labor. This image that unions are run by thugs, again, that's an American
media
image.
Oh, hold that thought. I have some personal experience in that that I'm going to share with you and the audience. But, yes, we're here at KRBS, but also, we have some new numbers here for calling into the station if you have anything to say about this, and either one of you listening may have. The telephone number is 537-12...
Really?
It's 539? 534? 530? No, oh, that's right, because now I've got to give the area code, because we might get calls from all over the world. 530-534-1200. Web address for us, the...
RadioBirdStreet.org, all spelled out, and you can find a button there to click listen online on our website, a brand new website, by the way.
And if you want to see what we're like, we're at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. Anyway, back to this. I had some experience with a union. I was in one, the National Maritime Union, for quite some time. And it worked like this. You go to sea, and when I got in there first, you had to be in there for, you had to be at sea, that is to say, like, that you threw off the lines and pulled up anchor and left for 100 days to get your regular book membership. You were just a sort of apprentice for that time. Well, I was at 99 or 98 days, I think it was, when my first trip ended, and I went to well, great, all I need is a couple more days. And, well, actually, we raised that to 300 days. And I got to about 245 days, and I was told by the port patrolman, no, we've raised that to 1,000. And what were they doing was, I thought, just protecting existing members, which I thought, well, you know, I can live with that. Except I started to come to the end of a voyage, and a guy would come back and come on the ship, and, you know, watch the payoff to make sure everybody's getting paid right. And then if you wanted to stay on the ship, he'd make it possible if you give him a couple hundred bucks. And I had a college to get back to, so I sort of stepped out of that. But I was kind of disappointed with that union corruption that I was facing.
That's it?
I forgot you grew up on the East Coast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Out here, it's
SIU. There's none of it out there.
Oh, no? Oh, yeah. That's the other union.
You right know, here. I was expecting that you were violently assaulted.
No. Hey, oh, okay. But I would have been a career seaman if Maine Maritime Academy.
Well, they did
was
you a favor,
original.
Tom.
What?
They did you a favor.
How do you figure that?
Well, you wound up on left turn on Bird Street.
It's true. I wouldn't be having this fun. Anyway, in this changeover from the AFL-CIO as it is understood to have existed to this new movement, do you think that there will be philosophical improvements, financial improvements, or just tactical improvements as a result of this, or no improvements at all?
I'd say as long as they're fighting, they're not going to be any improvements. However, the fact that these unions have left, it may result it's already resulted in administrative changes. I mean, there's a great number of people at AFL-CIO have lost their job because they were supported by the dues that these unions paid the AFL-CIO. You know, that's the business side of it. My understanding is with Sweeney.
Sweeney is who?
Sweeney is the president of the AFL-CIO, who's just reelected, and he's getting up there in age, and he was the target in this. They wanted Sweeney to change direction in AFL-CIO again to spend more money in organizing, and I'll tell you what. And unless you organize, the labor movement dies. And I have to say that I agree that there needs to be a lot of money thrown at organizing Walmart. I mean, this company that I think 67% of its goods are made in China, and so we call it the Great Wall of China Mart, a country that, you know, leads the world in forced abortions. So if you are inclined to be against abortion, all you really shouldn't be shopping at Walmart. But you know, Walmart relies on taxpayers to supply health care to its employees.
Does this split affect the unions that you represent?
Operating engineers are still involved in AFL-CIO, okay. And but it could affect it if. For instance, it would affect every existing AFL-CIO organization if these other unions go out and instead of trying to organize new workers, they try to organize existing workers. Again, what's going to happen is that all the unions are going to be too busy protecting their industry to go out and fight against Walmart. Go out and fight against Wall Street. And fight against George Bush, and fight against Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's really Pete Wilson, who tried to destroy unions when he was in office.
Okay, we're going to come back to the union discussions, because there's an interesting thing about Judge Block's new Homeland Security labor rules. That's another how the government is interfering with unions once again. If you can just give us a little song to do the interlude.
Tried so hard, my dear, to show that you're my every dream. Yet you're afraid each thing I do is just some evil scheme. A memory from your lonesome past keeps us so far apart. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart? Another love before my time made your heart sad and blue. And so my heart is paying now for things I didn't do. That make the teardrops start. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart? that you belong to me. But now I know your heart is shackled to a memory. The more I learn to care for you, the more we drift apart. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold?
Okay, we're back here at Left Turn on Bird Street, KRBS Low Power FM in Oroville, California. Our guest is Chuck Smith, union representative, and we've been talking about issues facing unions today, many of them having to do with a recent brouhaha between top union leaders. But the as always, the government's getting into trying to regulate or, if not, expunge unions. There's an interesting AP article that rolled over the wire over the weekend. It talks about a judge blocking new Homeland Security labor rules. A federal judge has blocked the Bush administration plans to overhaul personnel and pay rules at the Department of Homeland Security, saying the government-wide change of labor rules fails to protect workers' right to bargain collectively. Surprise! The decision, Friday, by U.S. District Judge Rosemary Collier, is a victory for the National Treasury Employees Union and other labor groups. They argued the proposal, which was set to be implemented Monday, would have taken away their bargaining rights on issues such as assigning employees and technology use. Labor groups have filed similar challenges to a Pentagon plan to revise Defense Department labor rules. That's also. This is.
I'm sure that judge is going to get replaced soon by the Bush administration. I'm sure he's.
We need a. They need a right-thinking judge.
It's not a good thing to for George Bush to have judges who actually follow the law.
This is considered an enormous and critically important win for the rights of federal employees, not only in DHS, but also in all federal agencies, said Colleen M. Kelly, president of the NTEU. So this stuff is going on. Maybe you could give us a sort of summary of what you think is going on and what specific issues that you're dealing with that may exemplify what's going on.
Well, just want to back up to this concept of bargaining collectively, because that is the basic right of all Americans in the workplace to form and join a union. And this basic right is under assault by the right wing in America. I remember recently seeing a quote from President Eisenhower, said any political party who went after labor wouldn't be long for this world. And the Republican Party today is trying to prove him wrong. We are in a class struggle. We've always been in a class struggle. We don't like to.
There is no class in America. I've been assured by managers I've ever worked for, there is no class in America. Willie, can you bring in my coffee now?
So, the right to bargain collectively is something that every American worker has in just about any industry. Management doesn't decide whether a union comes in or not. The workers do. Now, what's happening on the national level, there are organizations, these so-called think tanks that have idiots like, I think her name's Linda Chavez or something, who writes columns pointing out every particular failure of any union anytime. And unions are not perfect organizations, Tom, as your example, previous example.
Oh, I got another one.
But the best company is still not as good as the worst union in terms of where its heart is in protecting workers.
Well, my main complaint about unions that I've had to deal with, and that would be the one I was never in, so I'm not sure of the name, but the newspaper union. I was working for a San Francisco newspaper, and I was a stringer. That was way out in the boonies. And I got a phone call one day and said, well, we're going out on strike. I said, well, that's really interesting. And nobody told me about that. Well, didn't the 11 other correspondents tell you? No, didn't say a word to me. And so I said, well, you know, I'm not in the union, you know, and I need the money. And we can't tell you. You have to observe our strike line. So that's why I had several stories that I felt obligated to continue to file, since I told these people I was filing a story to the newspaper, and I filed a couple of stories and then stopped. But I'd get calls from the union, the correspondents, finally, they never told me, I'd been there about a year and a half, that they existed, and said, well, we're trying to form our own union here, for we're all going to get together and support. Well, you know, why were you, when you were ever supporting me until you needed me? And so guess what? The strike was ended. I cut off some of the editorial people, none of the print guys, I mean the backshop guys, and to account for the pay raise, they fired all their correspondents except me, and I only lasted another month or so. And so there you have it. Unions working for themselves and an increasingly fewer number of themselves as they cut off low-end guys to give pay raises to high-end guys in the union. Is this how unions protect workers?
You sound like the people who think that prevailing wage is a bad thing, because...
No, I think prevailing wages are a great thing if it goes to everybody, not just to the guys who happen to be in first.
Well, it actually goes to anybody, any company that gets the contract, because prevailing wage does not go to... you don't have to be a union company in order to win a bidding contract with prevailing wage. But I was talking about an article that appeared in the Appeal Democrat over the weekend, where the demand says, well, gee, you know, prevailing wage hurts the workers because they have the right to earn less money. And, you know, the whole thing that unions do is they raise the standards for every worker in America. Nobody fights for minimum wage except the unions. Nobody fights for labor laws except the unions. Now, they're an imperfect structure, and you can have a lot of experiences with them. You know, there's issues in my union that, or any union, where you might have an opinion, well, that doesn't seem to be a smart thing to do. But unions are the only ones out there fighting for workers' rights. Without them, you're back to child labor laws. I mean, unions brought you the weekend. You're back to, tell you what, I'll pay, you know, whatever somebody wants to come over here and work for. And if they're working for 12 cents a day in China, they'll work for 12 cents a day here if they get hungry enough.
Yeah, but I look at it slightly differently, as you can imagine, for the purpose of this argument. I don't like management. I do like the workers. The question of whether they're in a union or not, that's another matter. But unions should be all-inclusive, and so that everybody goes out on strike or everybody gets paid the same thing. What happens is that some people unionize, some people get a deal, and then to protect themselves, they keep excluding people rather than taking them in. And I think that defeats the whole purpose of a union.
I don't know of a single union that doesn't want to add union members. Now, in the collective bargaining agreement, for instance, with the newspaper guild you were talking about, probably the two sides are at the table, and they decided, okay, only full-time employees make it, you know, certain number of hours are going to be in the union. Believe me, the newspaper guild would probably love to have the correspondents in it. They're going to get more dues, right? And they'll represent more workers.
That's true, looked at the abstract, not necessarily true looked at the specific. For instance, the National Maritime Union, I was telling you about, the NMU, the head of it at that time, for a long time before, was Joe Curran. He was one of the guys in the original 1936 dock strike in San Francisco that started it. And I sailed with a guy who was in that same thing, only he was just a plumber machinist on a ship, and had quite a bit to say about the genesis of the union. What and explained to me why the days kept going up is that the days you had to be at sea kept going up because they were trying to more closely control the membership of the union. This is the height of the Vietnam War, where shipping was good. And what they were doing was some of the elder statesmen and the longer-serving union people were not too happy with the crookedness of Joe Curran and his pals, because they were ripping the union off, their pension fund and other things, to their own benefit. So there was a movement going on to get rid of Joe Curran, father of the union, or considered to be so. And how they were, Curran and his supporters were handling this was to bring in more Jamaican people and outsiders, other nations, to sail. They were making it easy for them to get a book. You needed a book to sail. So they were controlling membership, that is to say, the voting, that kept Curran in as opposed to out. So they're using that process to protect basically a corrupt union management. That's not to say the notion of unions is bad, but it can be perverted and was. That happens more often than you think.
It can be perverted, and it has been. It happens probably less often than you think. And
it happened to me, so it happens all the time.
That's my point. You grew up on the East Coast.
It's all about
you
me.
Grew up on the East Coast, Tom.
I don't want to hear the West Coast. Oh, is that because the guys in the Nick Nolte movie were throwing out all the corrupt people who were coming to California? What was it? I just saw it last night. The Los Angeles, L.A. Confidential. That's the movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I'm interrupting with personal tales, some actual news and good information that Chuck is giving.
Well, and I've lost my train of thought because I keep focusing on you on a boat. I would imagine that you were, you know, up and down, that you'd get sick. I mean, I thought...
Engine room to the top.
Your constitution is stronger than I thought, Tom. How is it you manage never to get into a union?
You know, it's just happenstance, because, as you say, unions like to bring you in if they could, but it doesn't do much to get one guy. They want a whole shop.
I don't know, Tom. I think maybe you just take one step into every project.
You know, that's a very good point, and that is actually true. If you look back on my life, I've tried a little of this and a little of that, but not much of anything.
You know, you have to make a commitment.
Does that sound like getting married?
That
I don't
want
to do that.
Well, let me talk about the experience with operating engineers, because there's actually some things going on that some young construction workers in this area would be interested in. Operating engineers represents 40,000 employees. 10,000 are public employees. The other 30,000 are private industry construction workers. And operating engineers had issues several years ago, where a judge decided that its membership was not as diverse as it needed to be, and like many other unions, it was placed in a under a judge's decree to broaden out its membership base. Well, the business manager for operating engineers today is a Mexican American. Its treasurer is a Mexican American. It has many high-ranking staff members who are African American. It has one of the most aggressive apprenticeship programs in the union movement throughout the United States. It has a great apprenticeship program in Rancho Murrieta, and it's going to be opening one soon in the Yuba Goldfields. And that's where they train young people, male, female, many, many more women going into the construction industry because of operating engineers. And so My experience with opera engineers being the only union that I've worked with, I've known other folks in the labor movement, is that they don't try to be selective in who they let in, and they would like to have 100% of the construction industry organized, having every person working under a union contract, getting benefits negotiated through collective bargaining with all the employees, voting on the contract, and every member having an opportunity to elect the officers of the organization. But again, unions aren't perfect. I'll tell you what, there's far more corruption on Wall Street than in unions. But you might as well be today. You might as well be that A&E episode on Jimmy Hoffa that ran at least once a month. Once a month, corporate America runs this A&E episode on Jimmy Hoffa.
But you see,
to remind people how corrupt unions are.
Well, I personally happen to like the mafia. But anyway,
they can get some things done, and Jimmy Hoffa got a lot of good things done for his membership.
There's no.
But nobody should be ripping off pensions.
But first of all,
not American Airlines, not George Bush through his Social Security thing shouldn't be ripping off pensions.
But first of all, let me make clear that I really like the idea of unions in a everybody get together and work to a common end, because it makes things much simpler.
You also believe in a perfect world.
Well, wait a minute. You know, if you're not going to strive for that, what would you strive for? An imperfect world or a worse world? I think that the real problem comes down to this, is that even though we can talk about working together towards a common end that will be beneficial to most people or as many as possible, the problem is that individuals are corrupt or self-serving or both.
Well, example, I negotiate contracts, and you'll have people who are single might have different economic goals and the people who are married. For instance, healthcare. Right now, healthcare costs are so out of whack that you negotiate a contract, say for instance that a bargaining unit might have 300 employees in it, and the employer may pay enough for healthcare to cover a single employee only, but not a family. And a family coverage for a family right now is up about $1,100 a month for insurance. And if the employer only pays half that, an employee working that has a family is going to have to pay $600 a month out of pocket for health insurance. And this is happening in one of the units I represent. Well, we sit down at the table and we go, okay, what's the biggest need? We need to help the family. Well, the single people are going, no, I want a pay raise. I want all that money going into my pocket. I don't want it to go to the people who've had a bunch of children. So, but Tom, these are issues that you deal with through the democratic process in the unions. We vote, and a majority rules in the bargaining unit.
You can see where that particular issue would fall apart, because most people grow up, have families. It's only a few bachelor-type people like me.
A lot of people, though, are deciding that they're single for purposes of insurance, so they don't have to pay the $600. They've got their child because I'm talking about public employees.
People
in a lot
really
of cases
don't
make enough money, or they don't make enough money to not qualify. I should say, so they're paid so little they can qualify for the welfare insurance. Healthy families. So they have their kids in healthy families. Their spouse is going to be out on their own, and they're getting insured. That's actually happened in Lake County, for instance. Now, hopefully, that situation can change all throughout California for all Californians from birth to death, and that's because of a Senate bill by Sheila Kuehl, Senate Bill 840. It's to create a single payer nonprofit health insurance program in California. It would get rid of all private insurance in California. Everyone would be covered under a single payer system.
This I could support. I do support, just even hearing about it, as you were telling me about it the other night.
Well, it's already passed the Senate. It's
Can you give us some details of it? Because I think that they've spent quite a bit of time putting this package together to squeak through a hostile environment, such as the California legislature. What does it do, and how much does it cost? Do you know that sort of thing?
Well, yeah. The concept is that the private insurance industry in California spends approximately $19 billion a year on administration and profits. Administration and profits. It's $19 billion that Californians pay for health insurance goes to the administration of the insurance program. And
the old trickle down.
Yeah, well, it's getting sucked up like a vacuum, your dollars. Under Sheila Kuehl's plan, and it's according to a report by the Lewin Group, you can actually spend less money total in California. Well, let me back up. With all the money that's being spent now in California for health care, there were 4 to 6 million people not covered by health insurance for all or part of 2004. That's in California. 4 to 6 million people. And a lot of these people, majority of these people, actually had jobs. They're actually working but had no insurance in the workplace because they worked for irresponsible companies like the Great Wall of China Mart and McDonald's. McDonald's spends a ton of money fighting efforts to require that they insure their employees. Under the Lewin Group report, they estimated that you could spend less money today on healthcare costs. We're talking about the total amount of money. You know, you take the total pot. We're talking about all the Medicare, all the healthy families, and all the money that employees pay for private insurance, all the money that employers pay for insurance. You could have one organization handle the administration of the insurance, and you could provide a benefit-rich program. By benefit-rich, I'm talking about an 80-20 plan that will pay 80% of 80 cents on the dollar for all your medical care. And you could do that with less money. Of course, a lot of people say, well, this is socialized medicine. Well, it's not socialized medicine because all the doctors, all the medical providers would remain private. You'd have your own choice of doctor. You'd be, you know, pretty much in control of your choice for who to see to get treated. And save a tremendous amount of money, particularly in emergency room care. People today, everyone, by the way, everyone today in California has medical insurance. Because if you get sick and you can't afford to go to a doctor and you don't have a insurance to pay for it, you have the assurance that when you go to the emergency room, they're going to treat you. They're going to treat you in, you know,
I heard
17 hours, maybe when you get in there, but it's going to be paid for by the taxpayers of California.
Were you the one telling me this? It may have been, but I found it very interesting. Is that no, it wasn't you. I think I know who. It seems that there was a fellow who had some internal problems, which turned out to be, when it finally investigated, life-threatening, but not incapacitating when it first arose. So his family took him to the emergency room at a local hospital. And sat there for 3 hours and couldn't be seen because there. It was explained to him, though. Somebody came out and said, look, you've been here a long time. What you do is you go out, call up an ambulance, have them bring you in, then we handle you. Otherwise, you're just going to be sitting here for who knows how long. Now, can you imagine? And now, an ambulance call is $800 or thereabouts, as far as I know. And you can see how that raises the cost of it. Isn't that kind of silly? I mean, doesn't that reflect what's going on here?
Well, you're absolutely right. The healthcare, the way we provide healthcare to people in California and all across the United States, I mean, it's all silly. It's ridiculous. It's all profit-driven, and, you know, that's wrong. It's dead wrong. And this proposal... they estimate that total health spending for California residents under the current system will be about $184 billion. in 2006. $184 billion we spent in California, and we can't get everybody insured.
What can people like Marianne and I do to make sure that this passes in the legislature?
Well, gee, call up Rick Keene. Call up Sam Onestad. All these Republicans have already voted against it. Tell them that you don't understand why they don't care about your grandma having insurance.
Yeah, well, I can't vote for some of those guys. And when you call up people, and I used to work in politics, as you know, the first question is, what do you got for me, and how much is it?
Well, I'd like to know what their what there are.
Flew out of your mind, eh?
Totally.
I know.
You know,
it's
also going to cost less for those memory retention pills.
I know. Well, what are they saying? You said they're already voting against it, like Keene. Why are they voting against it? What's their argument on it against it?
Oh, it's going to put people out of work in the insurance industry.
They're actually, that's what they put out there?
Oh, yeah.
So mid-level.
Well, also that it's socialized medicine.
No, they're still working on
what they're saying is that government can't do it as good as the private industry. Well, private industry is not getting it done. So get out of the way and let the people do it.
No, private industry is killing people.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is going to get through the legislature. It's already been passed by the Senate. It's close to being through committee, all the committees in the legislature. It will get to Arnold Schwarzenegger's desk, and guess how much money Arnold Schwarzenegger's taken from the insurance companies?
$5 million?
Which are not, he says, a special interest. Because you know what? An insurance company isn't a nurse. An insurance company isn't a worker. You know,
nurses, the ones that are dogging him around the state?
Not just nurses. Nurses, police officers, school teachers. I was part of the greeting committee for Arnold at Paradiso's the day he had the wine spilled on him by that Republican supervisor in Yuba County, John Nicoletti, who works, by the way, for Friday Night Live, which is an anti-alcohol group, and he sells beer at special events and then gets headlines for spilling his glass of wine all over the governor.
The Friday Night Live theoretically does good things for the community, and
they do wonderful
on
things.
Kids. I've always had deep suspicions about their ties to religious groups, but
up there they do have ties to religious groups. But the thing is that John Nicoletti, Republican, anti-tax Republican, you know, feeds off the public dole Friday Night Live because they get tax money, and then he has
money,
this,
by the way, that he has some control over. Don't the Board of Supervisors vote to make some contributions?
Now we're getting into the minutia of the conflict of interest.
Corrupt little is the
I'm
same
talking
as corrupt
about,
big.
I'm talking about the message he's sending kids.
John Nicoletti is not necessarily corrupt, I must add.
And now we're getting off the topic of the health care. But, it will get through the legislature. It will change everyone's relationship to medical insurance. Let's talk about the cost, how they're going to do this, because it is also going to involve a payroll tax. So, because you're going to have to get spending somewhere. But let's talk about, for instance, a public agency like Lake County, I'm familiar with, where I represent. This could save Lake County $2 million. It could save the city of Marysville $500,000. It can save Yuba County, Sutter County, Butte County. It could save a tremendous amount of money. Because right now, these employers are paying about $5 an hour. $5 an hour for health care. Under the payroll tax that they're talking about implementing, if you make $25,000 a year, it'll cost your employer $1.10 an hour. And it would cost you around 30 cents. Your employer could afford to pay your share and still save a ton of money. This will save public agencies up and down the state millions of dollars, and the Republicans ought to be jumping up and down and saying, hey, what a way to save tax dollars.
Sheila Kuhl helped write this. Is this unique to California? Are there other movements like this going on in other states, and have some been successful or others repudiated?
There are organizations throughout the United States pushing for this very thing. There is nothing like this. It's come this close anywhere in the United States. This would be the first single payer healthcare system in the United States.
Quick summing up: what are its chances, in your opinion, of actually coming true?
If we all throw wine on Arnold, no, I don't know. The prediction is that Arnold will not sign it.
Veto, or is that not signed?
That's called veto.
Okay. Anyway, you had one other thing that we talked about in the briefing that you wanted to talk about.
I was late for the briefing, Tom.
And it's coming on to 10 o'clock, so why do we not put on a song or two? It'll give us a chance to change discs and collect our thoughts and find out, did we say anything so far, and should we say any more later?
All right. I do want to let you know, listeners online and people out there, you can join in on this conversation by giving us a call here at area code 530-534-1200. You can join Tom.
I have
Chuck.
Made that announcement myself. So has Dan for 2 years now. And if those two people that listen to us aren't home, we get no calls.
Oh, no. I know more people are listening than that. All right, we'll be right back, or they'll be right back in just a few minutes.